minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Welcome back to another episode of Pack-A-Day Podcast. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Ross Uglum. Today, we have a really fun episode for you guys. It's on the rookie class for Brian Gutekunst. We had a really fun, exciting guest lined up. Unfortunately, that didn't work out today. Hopefully, in the future, we can make that work. But plenty of fun stuff still to talk about, Ross. Ross, how are you?
I'm good, man. It's good to be back on the show. We had a little miscommunication last time, but we're in the new house. I'm in the new studio, so very pleased to finally have my very brief bout with homelessness over.
Well, congratulations, man. And we did. It's been like over a month since we've had a show together, so I'm sure the people that have been clamoring for Ross and Jake, they can rest at ease. We are back, and we got some fun stuff to talk about. Ross, I want to jump right into it because, you know, the Packers have definitely been a team that I think a lot of people, there's a lot of doom and gloom kind of around them right now. I know looking back at even the last couple of podcasts on this very Pack-A-Day podcast series, you know, people have been talking about, okay, so Mike McCarthy's done. And you know what? I'm in that club, Ross. I don't know where you're at with that right now, but I'm definitely in that club. I tweeted out the other day. I said, you know, Mike McCarthy, I think he's a very good coach, but I just don't think he's the coach for this team anymore. And we don't need to talk about it a ton, but Ross, are you in that club yet?
Yeah, I'm there. I think you're exactly right. I think it's time. There's really nothing else to say.
I'm with you, and that's there's not much else to say. It's going to get talked about ad nauseum, but we don't need to spend a lot of time on it. People are already speculating with, you know, who their guys are, and I'm thinking maybe it's a little bit early for that, but that's something we haven't had to deal with in 13 years, so consider ourselves lucky. And I did say, and I will say, Mike McCarthy's tenure in Green Bay, I really strongly believe that it is one we are going to look back fondly on. I mean, look, Ted Thompson's just getting inducted to the Hall of Fame. And I think it's going to be kind of something like that, where it was just, okay, the last couple of years, like you just said, it's time. But so you can kind of say, you know, things haven't been going the way you maybe would have expected them or wanted them to go for Green Bay this season. But one thing that I think you can really look at, and it's kind of a silver lining to this season, is how well Brian Gutekunst's first draft class has been playing. You can really look at that and say, okay, they have a guy in place that if he can keep hitting on, if he can keep, you know, getting this ammunition and hitting on these picks like he has in this last class. I mean, you've seen it before. Look at, you know, like the Kansas City Chiefs this year, or, you know, they're a playoff team last year, but they're a legit Super Bowl contender this year with, you know, how quick teams can really just like turn it around in one season. And when you have Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback, I think there's just a few tweaks that they would need to make. But Ross, let's look at their draft class from this last year. Let's just go through them pick by pick. I will tell you what I would give for a grade. I'll briefly talk about it, and then Ross, I want you to tell me if I'm either spot on or if I'm an idiot for being way off. So the first guy, obviously, that they picked this year is Jaire Alexander, the cornerback out of Louisville. And you know, I'm not going to. Oh, look at that! Wow, my Apple Watch actually just heard me say Jaire Alexander, and it was just giving me the stats. Maybe it could give me a grade too. But anyways, so Jaire Alexander, first round pick. I think he's been playing really, really well. I think the national spotlight has kind of been starting to shine on him a little bit. I would give him right now, I would give him an A+. I think that's, he's playing about as good as you could want, especially a rookie corner to play. So I'm going with an A+ on him, Ross. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. If he's a top 10 corner in the league, which is, you know, kind of where Pro Football Focus has him at this time, that that absolutely makes him an A plus. I mean, that's what you're looking for when you draft a guy that high, especially when somebody gives you an additional first round pick to do it.
Yeah. And that's, and, you know, I'm not even factoring that into the equation. I'm just saying, you know, specifically how he's played. I think you already give him an A plus, and then you get bonus points for the additional first round pick. You know, some people have been saying, you know, Derwin James has been playing very good football for San Diego. And you could even make the argument that he's had a better rookie year than Jaire Alexander, but that's not the entire equation. What are they going to end up getting with that pick next year? I think you have to tie that directly to him. So, overall, I think that's a brilliant first move by Goody. I think it's paying off, and I think we're just going to see it get better and better. Where do you see Jaire projecting in the future, Ross? I mean, what is this guy's realistic upside if he realizes it?
Yeah, I think you'd have like a rich man's Brent Grimes or a poor man's Charles Woodson kind of deal, where you've got a guy that I don't think would ever maybe make it to like Woodson's level, but that has a chance to, you know, be that level where you are constantly worried about him on defense. So he's playing nickel, he's playing outside, he's playing where you need him to play, but wherever he's playing, he's tilting the field. And that, I think, is really what's important, is just the way that he consistently does or does not affect the football game. And that's where I think you're going to really consistently see him, I think, as a positive, because he affects the game, maybe not in as many ways as Woodson did, but at the same time, very, very effectively. Like, I don't know if he's as, you know, a blitzer or a fumble forcer or things like that, but he's just a pure speed cover corner. And when you have the agility to match up with inside guys and you have the vertical to be able to contest the big guys outside, you really take a lot off of your defensive coordinator's plate.
Absolutely. And I think, as you know, as you talk about his play on the field, but there are just certain guys that tend to elevate the guys around them. And I'm not comparing Jaire Alexander to like an Ed Reed or a Ray Lewis or those types of guys, but doesn't it just seem to you that he just has that type of swag that guys are going to rally to him? I mean, you saw it before the game last week. He was the guy in the huddle getting guys jacked up for the game. That's not something you see very often from a rookie. And it's, you know, there's guys that talk, that like to chirp and do stuff like that, but guys don't always follow them. If you understand what I'm saying, where it's almost, you know, it's kind of like, I'm going to compare it to like Jameis Winston is a guy that likes to chirp. He likes to talk, but his teammates almost kind of roll their eyes when he says stuff. Jaire is not that guy. He's the guy that he's running his mouth and he's having fun and guys are having fun with him. And that's, to me, what's really exciting, because that's the unscouted stuff. That's kind of the stuff you don't really know if you have that or not in a player until they've kind of come in and kind of put in the work and the veterans are following this dude. So to me, that's just really exciting, just how he's been able to really elevate the play and the energy in that secondary.
Oh, 100%. I mean, that you're exactly right. He, from a leadership standpoint, is way beyond, you know, what you would anticipate from a rookie.
Which, yeah, so exciting stuff for him. So I think Ross and I are both across the board with an A-plus slam dunk first pick for Brian Gutekunst. So off to a great start for him. Second pick, your guy, the 45th overall pick in last year's draft class, Josh Jackson. For me, he's a guy he seems like the transition to the NFL. You've seen flashes. He's more of what you'd expect, in my opinion, from a rookie corner, his transition, where sometimes it looks like the game is pretty fast for him. Things maybe aren't slowing down as much. And, you know, some of that might come into the fact that he's, you know, he played one year of major college football, had a great, fantastic, highest scoring year that Pro Football Focus has ever had for a corner. But I think you're starting to see maybe with him, some of the stuff, some things start to unravel in front of him and him not really having an answer for certain things. So for Josh Jackson, I think I would give him just a flat C right now. And thinking he's going to get better. Cause if you judge him off of the stuff he's done well, that's exciting. But he's also made some mistakes as well. So Ross, either tell me I'm right or defend your guy a little bit here.
No. And I think, you are right. I think he is kind of, you know, a little bit more, certainly taking the learning curve, but you have to keep in mind that he's being played out of position. In no way would I see Jair Alexander and Josh Jackson and look at their athleticism and look at the things that make them football players and then decide to put Josh Jackson in the slot and Jair Alexander outside. It makes no sense to me. Jair is shorter, slot. Jair is quicker, slot. Like, I don't understand how they have decided to match Josh Jackson up in an unfamiliar position in, you know, something that maybe isn't suited for a guy that, yeah, I mean, he's a zone boundary corner, the same as Kevin King. Not that they can't play other techniques, but that's where the bread is buttered. So why you would want him playing, you know, a bunch of inside corner nickel stuff, I don't get it. I don't understand the way that he's being used. I like him as a tight end weapon, you know, kind of guy to take stuff away. But they did that for 1 week, and then it stopped. And then they just decided that, well, he matched up well against tight ends. Maybe we'll keep him inside, and I don't like it. I don't understand what they're doing. He needs to play outside cornerback, and this could be his chance. You know, I think that it would make a lot more sense to have Breland, you know, press guys inside and reroute guys trying to run slot routes and have King and Jackson outside. But yeah, that's my issue with it, and part of it is because I just continue to believe in Josh Jackson as a prospect and refuse to think that what I saw on film was, you know, a flash in the pan.
When you talk about, you know, he is a zone corner, and he was able to come in and kind of play in that slot role and be that tight end racer. So part of me thinks, you know, and kind of buys into the fact, you know, is he eventually going to end up as a safety in the NFL? I don't know where you fall with that. And personally, I would like to see him get a shot playing outside corner first before that, because in my opinion, I just think that's a much more valuable position than safety. And he's kind of had some safety looks this year. And I think that's kind of why they want to keep him inside. But kind of agreeing with you as well, Ross, outside corner is a premium position. You might have a guy that can play it really well. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that. If you think he's eventually going to end up at safety or what with that.
No, you nailed it. I mean, he is an outside corner and a darn good one. And it's a premium position. You can get safeties, you know, I think it's a lot easier to get a safety than it is to get a premium outside cornerback. You see guys that succeed from, you know, I think lower draft positions, sometimes even undrafted spots where, you know, Green Bay's had guys with varying levels of success, of course. I mean, Kentrell Bryce, whatever you may think of him. But my point is that you can kind of get it done with a third or a fourth round pick at safety. Usually you can get it done, as we saw this offseason, with a very inexpensive free agency signing. That's where you can kind of cheap out. If it doesn't work out at cornerback, do I think he could play safety? Sure, but there's no reason to default to that.
Yeah, and I'm with you. And even talking about, I mean, gosh, well, what do the Packers value? You know what I mean? Look at what they've done with their safety position just in the last couple of weeks. You know, HaHa got jettisoned out of there. How it was almost poetic justice, too, to see Julio Jones catches first touchdown, and I just remember watching the Red Zone channel, and I'm just like, who's 20? Oh, that's Ha-Ha getting stiff-armed and carried into the end zone. So that was kind of funny to me. But then Jermaine Whitehead, too. Like, my goodness, I was kind of thinking about, you know, I just was having some thoughts and thinking, you know, Jim Leonard was kind of that guy that was, you know, not all there as far as athleticism, but he was such a smart football player that Mike Pettin just took him everywhere with him. And so I'm kind of starting to think, okay, you know, Mike Pettin must have like an affinity for Jermaine Whitehead because, you know, I don't really see it, but they rave about how smart he is. So maybe that's it. And then he, you know, he open fist slaps a guy and gets cut. So what they're doing at the safety position, it wouldn't appear that they value the safety position that highly, which honestly, if you look at the trend in the NFL, Ross, it looks like a lot of teams don't.
Yeah, if you're not, you know, really going after that single high, Malik Hooker, Earl Thomas, even Jamal Adams, superstar level field tilting guy, the NFL has really figured out that kind of anybody can do it as far as your box safety or your split safety in cover two. That position is not a difficult one to fill. There are positions certainly that are a lot more difficult than that. One of them, like you said, being outside corners. So you're exactly right. I mean, it's not just Green Bay. I don't know if disrespecting is the right word, but it's not just Green Bay that's, you know, driving down the market for safeties or showing a lack of concern at the safety position. It's the entire league.
Right. And it's, you know, you want as many guys that can cover on the field as you can right now, because tackling is borderline illegal in the NFL anyway. So I think just the safety position in general has just changed so much. That guy, that intimidator over the middle, he doesn't exist anymore. And there's not a place for him anymore, today's NFL. So I think that has something to do with it. But we'll see. That's an interesting thing to watch moving forward too, just as, you know, the NFL kind of turns into a flag football league. But the next guy was, let's look up, make sure, Oren Burks, where did he get drafted at? He was the 88th overall pick, so still a top 100 guy, inside linebacker from Vandy. You know, my thing for him is last week, it might have even been you, Ross, that said this, but, you know, you draft a guy like this that's just, you know, an athletic phenomenon, and you want him for a game like this where there's a James White, there's, you know, a Rob Gronkowski who didn't play, obviously, but you want that really athletic inside linebacker that's going to give you some coverage ability. And so that is the type of game that they drafted Oren Burks for. And they threw him out there, you know, a bit. And even this season, he looked good in the preseason, but he looks very overwhelmed right now. He is a very athletic guy that is playing slow because you can just tell the wheels are turning and he is not there yet mentally. And I just don't think he looks like a liability out there at times. So I would give him a C- just because he has flashed. But I think he's got a long ways to go. He's still got the athletic traits, but to me, he's not a guy I would trust to be on the field right now. And if Blake Martinez gets hurt, I know, Ross, you don't, and I don't really either give it, you know, kind of like the safety position, inside linebacker is kind of one of those things that unless you have a special guy, it's kind of ho-hum, whatever. But if Blake Martinez gets hurt, that actually would worry me if, you know, Oren Burks was their de facto number one inside linebacker. So I'd give him a C- right now. I'm wondering where you would grade him out, Ross.
Yes, C is fine with me. He's just a guy that at this point is exactly what we thought he was going to be. And then we were given reason to be a little bit more optimistic than that. He's a project. He's a free safety convert into middle linebacker in college. They want him to play linebacker now because of his athletic upside. He's just not ready. And I think that really actually showed, you know, in Vanderbilt as well. He was not very good his senior year. I think he really got drafted more on leadership qualities, which he has in spades, and frankly, special teams capability and athletic upside, because what he put on film his senior year was not inspirational.
Yeah, agreed. And he's a traits type player. You draft him and think he is very early on his timeline of his development. And hopefully that's the case. I mean, he did some really nice things in preseason, which is really where an athletic guy like that, you know, in a vanilla type offense versus a vanilla type defense, he can really just go out and fly around. So that's the type of guy I'm hoping that, you know, can emerge in the next couple of years. But right now I'd say, you know, he's a C minus, maybe even D plus type of grade, but I would probably err on just the C minus. The next pick for the Packers is really the first one I'm going to be kind of harsh on for a number of reasons, but it was pick 133, and that is Jamon Moore. And the reason I'm going to be harsh on it is just because the other two receivers, how they've been able to pass them. So it's kind of a, it's not the worst type of grade because two of the three guys look like they're about to hit. But Jamon Moore, obviously being the higher of the three draft picks, you know, my expectations for him were relatively high coming into this season. I thought he could be the guy that could step up and be that 400, 500 yard type receiver his rookie year. All early indications were pointing towards that in camp. He was kind of the hot name in camp the first 2-3 weeks. You know, he just hasn't been able to even get on the field. And so that's, to me, concerning, especially with the injuries starting to strike. And maybe, you know, maybe he'll have a chance here with Geronimo going down and Randall still looking like he's not super healthy. I understand Trevor Davis is back, too. They just activated him off the IR today. So for Jamon Moore, I'm going to give him a D grade. Granted, that's, you know, Ross, we should have started with this by saying we're 8 games into their careers. You know what I mean? So giving him a D right now, D with the hopes that he's going to improve. But from his performance right now with his peers in the same draft class, he just hasn't lived up to the same type of the ability that his classmates have. So I'm going to give him a D.
Well, right. And so, like, let's just say the Packers, where they took, you know, Marquez, where they took St. Brown, take another corner or take a tight end, whatever. We're not having this conversation because it would not be weird for Green Bay or any team, frankly, to have a day three, even top end of day three, but a day three wide receiver that doesn't look like he's going to be able to contribute in year one. You look at Jordy Nelson's year one production, you're not going to see much. Same for, you know, a lot of top end receivers, not necessarily with the Packers. Green Bay has been lucky in the past. James Jones was a good rookie. Greg Jennings was a good rookie. Devontae Adams was kind of forced into action as a rookie. But it's not strange to have a receiver struggle right away in their career. That's a very normal type of deal. And frankly, I don't think if Valdez-Scantling and St. Brown weren't as good as they are, we would be quite as critical of Moore being a fourth-round pick and playing that very advanced position. I mean, there are a lot of things that go into being a receiver, and specifically, there are a lot of things that go into being a receiver in an Aaron Rodgers offense.
Yeah, sure, and that's more than fair to say that. So would you just give him an incomplete at this point?
Yeah, I mean, an incomplete or another C, you know, dead average. Like, I, you mentioned it. It is asinine to even be doing grades of prospects 8 weeks into season one of their career. But, you know, we are a daily content podcast that focuses on one team. We got to make it if we're going to make it.
Yeah, and I think it should more so be grading the first 8 games of their rookie season. You know, not even looking at, you know, what do we think they're going to be? Because honestly, you could make a case that every single draft pick say, "Oh, well, I still believe in his potential." Yeah, and you should, because it's 8 games into their season. Anything they've done, good or bad, you know, whatever. You know, it's we've been lucky to see a lot of really good performances, and like I said earlier, that's why I think, you know, if you're excited about Brian Gutekunst, then good, you should be, because he's looking like he had a hell of a first draft class. The next guy on the list is probably someone that no one's mentioned in a long time for obvious reasons. He's not on the team. And we'll see. And so obviously his grade is incomplete. but that's Cole Madison. And that, you know, it's weird. He's an interesting guy. He's a talented guy. I know, you know, we talked a while ago about kind of some of the off the field stuff that he had been going through. And it seems like he's just kind of leery to continue playing football, which in this day and age, can't fault the guy for. But as a talented guy, you know, the right guard position kind of being in flux as it is, you have to wonder at this point, if he shows up to camp, if he's there all training camp, all off season, is he the starting right guard right now? It's, you know, it's speculation, no idea. But he's the type of guy that next year, you know, say he shows up to camp, that's like almost like a bonus pick in next year's draft class. And I hope he does. I hope he makes the right decision for himself, but the selfish Packer fan in me hopes he plays and that he can see that we can see what type of ability this guy has.
Yeah. You always want to get you want to be able to, if you have the lottery ticket, you want to at least see if it's the right numbers. You know, he is as any draft pick is a lottery ticket. And, you know, does he have a chance to hit? Yeah, sure. He could still be the best guard in the history of football, but if he never plays, we'll never find out. And so that's, you know, just something that you definitely want is the opportunity to at least see the kid in a training camp. And, you know, maybe it'd be good for his development. I don't know if he's staying in shape, if he's getting stronger, what the deal is as far as, you know, preparation for the continuation of a professional football career. But it was basically a roster exemption this year. I mean, it's a guy that they did not have to panic about. Do we cut him? Do we not cut him? And I believe the last thing Gutekunst ever said was, I expect him to eventually be a part of the football team. And they have an open line of communication that we are completely not privy to. We'll figure it out.
Yep. And so that's, yeah, just something to monitor moving forward. And hopefully it's a fun story next year. Next pick, 172, J.K. Scott, punter, Alabama. Interesting in the news for a lot. Very, you know, first of all, congratulations to J.K. Scott for being, you know, the first 12-year-old to be a father. But he's, you know, his wife gave birth this week. I think it was on Monday. So congratulations to him for real. And it was interesting because he's kind of had, you know, he's had an up and down rookie year. You see the potential, you know, as far as what a punter can bring to the table. You've seen the field tilting ability, the field flipping ability. And so that's something I think that's really exciting, but to have for a punter, I mean, you got to have one, so you might as well have a good one. But it was interesting last week. I already forgot the guy's name, but whoever they signed for the week, you know, people were kind of freaking out right away and saying, well, what's the deal with J.K. Scott? Are we giving up on this guy? And we spent a fifth-round pick on him, and then it just turned out the Packers were actually kind of doing kind of a cool thing, actually, just to make sure that obviously JK, you know, clearly wanted to be there for the birth of his first child. So the Packers made accommodations to make sure that they had, you know, their stuff covered on their end. So it's pretty neat, actually. But as far as his grade so far, I'd give him a B minus as far as a rookie punter, just because you've seen some of the booming punts, but you've also seen some of the shanks. Unfortunately, that shank against the Rams kind of cost them big time. He picked a bad time to have probably the worst punt of the year. But for him, I'd give him a B minus, which obviously talking about a punter 8 games into his rookie season isn't the sexiest of topics. But hey, that's what we do here on Pack a Day Podcast. We cover it all. So I'll give him a B minus, Ross.
Yeah, you know, for a while there, he was Pro Football Focus's top graded punter in the league. So you can definitely see his potential. What type of player he has the ability to be. And, you know, at that point, you know, I like I said, it's basically pre-free agency where he was selected. They decided that the punter from a season ago was not going to be the answer. So they, you know, give this kid a shot. And I think you nailed it as far as could it have been better? Yeah. Is it a disaster? Is it BJ Sander? No, it's been largely fine.
Yeah. So if you're going to give him a grade, Ross, what would you tag on him?
And this is going to, I mean, it's going to start to be C a lot, you know.
That's fair. That's more than fair. Ross is just going with your average. He's going with the safe pick. I like it. The next pick, round five, 174, kind of the darling of this draft class so far. Let's make sure we get the name right. Marquez Valdez-Scantling. No K in that name. Okay. So Marquez, who goes by Quez, has really been a revelation to this offense, truthfully, as a fifth round pick, almost out of the top 200. He's been a lot of fun to watch. He's, in some of these games that they have not been playing very well. And our founder, Andy Herman, actually tweeted out something I think that he just absolutely hit it out of the park, just saying, whatever you think about this offense, bottom line is it's gotten really boring to watch. And so Marquez has been really exciting to watch, to say the least. I mean, he's averaging over almost 22 yards a catch. He's only, trailing DeSean Jackson in Tampa Bay. So that's been really exciting. So from where he was picked and what I think he has got in him, and he's projected, Ross, to have over, 750 yards receiving, which, before this season, we were completely talking about who's going to be this guy, because we didn't know about Geronimo. We didn't really know behind, Devontae and Randall, who was going to be the guy to step up. And we were hoping one of these rookie receivers could give you like 400 yards receiving. And looks like Marquez is going to, he's going to eclipse that, hopefully, if he continues on this trajectory. So from where he was drafted, if I had to grade the first five or the first eight games of his career so far, I think he's got to be an A+, just because I think he's completely exceeded expectations. I think his upside is, unlimited. I mean, he's got, what does he not have? You know what I mean? As far as athletic profile. So, huge guy, fast guy, just oozing with potential. So someone to be really excited about, but I would give him an A+, Ross.
Yeah, I don't think there's another possible grade for Valdez-Scantling. He is far and away exceeded my expectations. I think he's even exceeded what he put on tape at the University of South Florida. He has, frankly, exceeded expectations that you would put on darn near any rookie wide receiver. I mean, period. And has a chance to be special because, as you mentioned, there are not athletic traits that he doesn't possess. Those are not a real thing.
He reminds me a little bit, and I'm not big on comparisons, but as far as just his athletic profile, he reminds me of a little bit of Martavis Bryant, just how big and athletic he is. And I don't know what you think about that, Ross, but that's kind of the vibe I'm starting to get from him, is if he can be that alien type receiver. So hopefully he can. And as far as, we talked about upside with Jair, but same with this guy. What do you think? Just sky's the limit with him? Like what are some realistic year two and three type things for a guy like this?
I mean, it depends on how he picks up the offense, but you just talked about, like, if your opinion is that, their RAS score is their ceiling, just physically, like what's the most you can get out of him? It's like Randy Moss. And I don't think he's going to the Hall of Fame. I don't even know if he's going to end up being a starter. But I'm talking about just raw athleticism. It is beyond elite. I mean, he, from an agility standpoint, when you throw it in with his height, his reach, and his speed, like I said, there are not athletic gifts that he doesn't have. And there is a probably even still with what he's put on tape now, there is still a better chance that it doesn't all pan out perfectly than that it does. But man, if he even becomes 80% of the player that he's physically capable of being, he's a long-term starter. And to get that in the fifth round is just excellent drafting.
Absolutely. And you want to talk about RAS scores. There was few wide receivers in this draft class that had a better – actually, he might be better. I might be getting these two mixed up. But in any case, both of these receivers had very elite RAS scores. And the other one was Equanimeous St. Brown, who, coming into this year's class of the three receivers, he was the guy that I had the highest grade on coming into this draft. I was absolutely shocked that he was there in round six at 207. a pick 207, and even more shocked that the Packers took him, just because it just seems like guys that I've really liked in the past that have fallen, the Packers, especially with Ted Thompson, just have never really picked those guys. So when they picked Equanimeous, I was kind of weirded out. I was just like, wow, they actually took someone that I'm a really big fan of. And so he's, you know, we talked about Jair, you know, going beyond expectations, and Josh Jackson kind of being that guy that's flashed, but he's going on a probably a more traditional learning curve. And I would say Equanimeous is kind of the Josh Jackson of the receiver group in the sense of he's flashed. He's done some very nice things. He is someone that I really like his ability, and I like where he's come working. Both of these guys, I like their ability and how far they've come this season working at the line of scrimmage and working on their release, because that's one thing that I thought both of them were going to struggle with their rookie year, and granted, they still do. But Equanimeous is someone that, you know, if you start thinking, and you just, you know, Ross, you do this too, you just kind of start daydreaming about, you know, let's say MVS hits, let's say EQ hits. I mean, those are two freak athlete, huge receivers that you can play on the outside. And then you have the footwork king himself. I mean, could, like, giving Devontae a two-way release in the slot isn't even fair. And so you could potentially have those two on the outside with Devontae on the inside. So, you know, thinking about things like that just kind of – it just makes me giddy for the future, especially if they go out and get someone that would be creative with that. But so – for EQ, I would give him just a flat B in his first eight games, because I think he's kind of, honestly, from what I projected coming into this draft class, he's kind of done what I would assume he would do, even though the Packers got him way late.
Yeah, so you're grading based on your own expectations. Yeah, I'm just basically grading off of draft position, and for me, that's A minus. I mean, you can't ask that much more out of a sixth round receiver pick than to do what he's done. I mean, he won them a football game.
True. Yep.
So, you know, that catch against San Francisco, if that's a drop by whoever, undrafted free agent, Trevor Davis, I don't care. If that's a drop by somebody that's not Equanimeous St. Brown, they lose. Well, maybe they don't lose, but they don't win right there, which is what they did. They won right there. The game was ended. So, you know, I think if we're realistically kind of putting him as a sixth-round pick up against other sixth-round picks, it's got to be an A something. And if you – you know, A minus because he's been a little bit inconsistent, but I mean – the realistic expectations of a sixth round pick at that position are almost none.
Right. And that's, you know, and that's an awesome point. And you think about it, if you're an NFL GM and you say, hey, you got the 207th pick right now. If you take this guy, he's going to win a game for you this season. You take that guy every single time, you know? Right. So that's a great point. And, you know, that's more than most sixth round draft picks maybe even do in their career. So that's a good point. That's a very good point. And I'd probably move my grade up on him too. But so he's great. I'm looking at the rest of this draft class. As far as James Looney, not much we can say about him other than he is another guy that's got an elite relative athletic score. He kind of got his butt kicked all preseason, but he is a freak athlete. Now, I don't know if you want to comment on him, Ross. He's on the practice squad still. So
yeah, I mean, it's obviously a little concerning that they brought up Lancaster. You know, you have to have some level of concern about. But you know, I've said for a while, and I take it, you know, not quite as far as Justice does. But his big thing is the draft is four rounds. My big thing is it lasts five. Once you've gotten past the fifth round, we're talking about pre undrafted free agency. So as far as I'm concerned, Equanimeous is an undrafted free agent that hit, you know, and Looney is an undrafted free agent that didn't, and Lancaster is potentially an undrafted free agent that did, and that's the way that I look at everything, you know, as far as draft expectations. So, but yeah, I think, like I said, that has to be pointed out, even if just briefly, that, by the way, they had a UDFA, you know, jump him basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. And then, so let's see the last two. So, guy that's on the roster, Hunter Bradley, long snapper. I haven't really noticed that he, I mean, he's actually had some bad snaps. But,
yeah, I was going to say, it has not gone seamlessly.
But as far as, I mean, I don't know. I'm not, you talk about, I'm not a big, he hasn't, he's had some bad snaps, but it hasn't really, gosh, I, never mind. You can kind of say that even that Detroit game, that maybe some of those snaps actually did kind of get in Mason's head a little bit. So you're right. It hasn't gone seamlessly. It'll be interesting to see what they do at that position moving forward. And the thing is, I don't know a ton about long snapping. So
well, no, that's me either. I might even give off a public, appearance that I know more about football than I do. But one thing I will never try to, even pretend is that I know anything about long snapping technique. I understand the layman's understanding of what is and isn't a good snap, but beyond that, I'm pretty worthless.
That's and you go back and you think about, talking about Brett Good or Good, whatever his name is. See, like that's the thing. I don't even really know how to say the long snapper's name that was there for like 10 years. But they talk about how he could snap the ball to a point where the laces were exactly where they wanted to be when you catch it. And like, yeah, just to hear stuff like that is absurd. And so I don't think Hunter Bradley's at that level. And that's the thing too. And that's what I was saying is, obviously it's something you can get better at, like anything, I guess. But how much patience do you give a long snapper? I don't know. We'll find out. Hopefully Hunter Bradley doesn't cost them a game this year. And if he doesn't, good on him. And they use a 7th round pick on him. So we'll see. And then their last pick was Kendall Donerson, who was probably one of, I think he's in the top 5 for RAS scores from this last season. So he is a guy that I think is at least an interesting developmental prospect. And they actually brought in a guy, Brady Sheldon from Ferris State. He's on the practice squad. Kind of who I would, he's kind of comparable to Donerson, just because they got two freaky athletic outside linebacker edge rush players that, chances are very slim that they hit. But I at least like that they're going after these freak type athletes. So that's interesting for me. I don't think Donerson really has. I mean, he flashed a little bit in the preseason. He's been on the practice squad all year. I doubt he ever makes it up to the active roster. I mean, they've been carrying 4 outside linebackers and he hasn't come up yet. So unless there's an injury there, I don't know what they would do.
Yeah, that's an obvious C for me. We don't know. Expectations have to be minimal, if any, frankly. So I'm not going to, pretend to offer an opinion on Donerson. I think it's smart what they did as far as 7th round picks being a lottery ticket. Let's take an actual athletic lottery ticket. And so, I wish that they still had Kevin Green. I think, they used to, people complain about the edge rush, and they should. I mean, it's not good, but people forget just how much this defense got out of Clay Matthews and a bunch of absolute bums, Frank Zombo, Eric Walden, Desmond Moses, Vic Sooto. I could go on forever.
Andy Mulumba. Yeah, all these guys.
Right, Andy Mulumba. What has Winston Moss been given since Green left? Oh, just, Kyler Fackrell, top 100 pick. And you may think he sucks, but he's top 100 pick. Nick Perry, first round pick. Clay Matthews, first round pick. Vince Beagle, 101st overall pick. I mean, they've been given so much more than Kevin Green was ever given. It'd just be nice to have him around because I think he was really freaking good at his job.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't disagree with you. He was, and he'll always have a special place in Packers fans' hearts from that Super Bowl comment he made. But so that's, so that's what we got for our Thursday edition of the podcast. We can talk real briefly. There's Miami coming up. Did you see what the spread was on that? Last I checked, it was like 7-5.
Yeah, I mean, I think you would, I think you kind of have to shut it down if they lose this game, frankly. Yeah. You got a home game against the Rocket Ship. If you have any interest in competing this season, you win the game.
That's, yeah, and I'm with you. That's where I'm at. And I honestly, though, Ross, I think they do. I think this is – and this is the first, you know, in a while, the first game that they've gone into without really kind of having this over, this looming thing over their head of like, wow, this is a really freaking good team we got to play this week. Miami's not that good. They should win this game. And don't let their record deceive you. They're, you know, they haven't been good since Brock's been playing. So I think the Packers win by
– not the Bears.
Oh gosh, that's true. Well, way to be the bearer of bad news there. But no, I think this game's in Lambeau. They win by 10 plus points. That's.
Oh, I wasn't trying to be the bearer of bad news. I was just making fun of Chicago.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, good point. That's always welcome. That's always legal here. So, Chicago kind of scares me, but no, they still suck. So, anyways, all right. That's all we got, Ross. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we can get that guest on here that we were talking about. And we'll bring that to you guys. As always, you can follow me at Jacob Morley. And you can follow Ross on Twitter at Ross Uglum. Make sure you give Pack-A-Day a subscription and a rating on any, you know, whatever you get your podcasts on, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever, all those things. So make sure you guys give us a follow. We appreciate you guys listening, and as always, go Pack Go.
Shotgun formation of 3rd and 15 to the 46-yard line of Dallas. They empty the shotgun. Cobb in motion to the left side. Rodgers looks it over, gets the snap. Backpedals now under some pressure. Steps up, throws it over the middle. Good, Adams! 30, turns upfield, 25, cutting right to the 20, 15, 10, 5. Devontae Adams to the south end zone for the touchdown! Rodgers looks it over, starts to his left. Now he moves, starts to the right side. Snap to A-Rod. Looking downfield, being flushed. Rolling left, winds up. Rainbows it high.